Good morning. Utah's governor calls the killing of activist Charlie Kirk a political assassination. We'll have the facts from the scene and hear from Matt Schlapp of the American Conservative Union on Morning Edition from NPR News. One day after NATO forces shot down Russian drones that flew into Poland, authorities say they were unarmed dummy drones to fool Ukraine's defenses. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Michelle Martin. How are NATO countries responding? It is Thursday, September 11th, 24 years after the 9/11 attacks. The men accused of the terrorist attacks have still not gone to trial. Plea deals that would have avoided a death penalty trial were made and then canceled. We'll hear from the families of two victims who have different views about what should happen next. News is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Authorities in Utah are still searching for a suspect in the shooting death of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. He was attacked yesterday while speaking at a Utah university. President Trump is expressing anger and grief.
My administration will find each and every one of those who contributed to this atrocity and to other political violence, including the organizations that fund it and support it, as well as those who go after our judges, law enforcement officials, and everyone else who brings order to our country.
Others have expressed anger. Former Arizona Congresswoman Gabby Giffords said she was horrified at the news. Giffords was shot and badly wounded in 2011 at a public event. Two students have been wounded after another student shot them at a high school near Denver yesterday. Colorado Public Radio's Alejandra Alonso Galva has more.
Three teenagers were shot, including the gunman, by a self-inflicted gunshot wound. He died later at the hospital. A fourth student was injured during the evacuation. Law enforcement says the suspect was a student and used a handgun, but a motive remains unknown. Jen Weber is a parent of a freshman who was able to escape. When she heard about the shooting, she went running through the woods to try and reach the school.
I actually had no idea. I was out washing my car, and I just got a text message from him that said that there was a shooter and that he loved me.
A vigil was held at Flatirons Community Church in Golden Wednesday night as the state comes together in the wake of the shooting. For NPR News, I'm Alejandro Alonso Galva in Denver.
Federal immigration officers continue their operations in Chicago. There have been arrests and immigrants are worried. From member station WBEZ, Adriana Cardona-Magigad has more.
Chicago residents have filmed arrests and shared them on social media. Ana Gil Garcia with the Illinois Venezuelan Alliance says many Venezuelans in the area are afraid. The Trump administration changed the rules for Venezuelans who had been allowed in the country under asylum, humanitarian parole, and other programs during the Biden administration.
The Venezuelan community is hiding. They cannot go to work. They have to remain at home, and we don't know for how long.
Gil Garcia says she's been getting calls from people whose family members were arrested at immigration court appointments. For NPR News, I'm Adriana Cardona-Magigad in Chicago.
Government officials in Qatar remain furious at Israel's attack on Hamas leaders this week in Qatar's capital. Six people died, none of them top Hamas leaders. Qatar's prime minister says Israel's attack is, quote, state terrorism. Israeli officials are unapologetic and say they'll strike anywhere they need to. President Trump was warned only a few minutes before the attack happened. This is NPR. Massachusetts Democratic Senator Ed Markey and two House Democrats have sent President Trump a letter. They're worried over his plans to transfer 20 metric tons of plutonium from U.S. bombs to commercial use. Trump wants to get rid of surplus plutonium, but the lawmakers say he's creating a brand new risk of proliferation, that someone could use that plutonium possibly to make new nuclear bombs. NASA scientists say they're one step closer to learning whether Mars once hosted forms of life. NPR's Bill Chappell reports.
NASA researchers say they found potential signatures of life in a rock sample from an ancient river valley on Mars. Nikki Fox is an associate administrator of NASA's Science Mission Directorate.
This finding by our incredible Perseverance rover is the closest we've actually come to discovering ancient life on Mars.
The rock sample has patterns of what researchers call leopard spots, made of minerals. Fox says that on Earth, such patterns are often linked to biological processes.
It's kind of the equivalent of seeing leftover fossils, you know, leftovers from a meal. And maybe that meal's been excreted by a microbe. And that's what we're seeing in this sample.
NASA wants to bring the samples back to Earth for more analysis. But right now, there's no plan or money to do that. Bill Chappell, NPR News.
California Governor Gavin Newsom says the Trump administration is going to stop letting motorists in electric vehicles and other clean cars use carpool lanes. The governor says that means carpool lanes will only be reserved for vehicles with more than one occupant. The change takes effect October 1st across the country. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Doris Duke Foundation, which aims to support the well-being of people and the planet for a more creative, equitable, and sustainable future. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
That's the Stay Human Band. I'm Michael Goldberg, and some of the storytellers heard on our Stay Human radio show are putting on a concert of live storytelling Saturday, September 20th at Clocko Brewing. Starting at 7 o'clock, the show features nationally known storyteller Lauren Neamey. He's holding a workshop called The Authentic Voice for some of the Stay Human crew, and we'll share the work we've been doing together at this event. I hope I see you there. 7 p.m. Saturday night, September 20th at Clocko Brewing in Grand Rapids. Storytelling to stay human with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Michelle Martin. In a few minutes, we'll speak with the chairman of a leading conservative political organization who is close to the late activist Charlie Kirk.
First, federal and state authorities want help in finding the person who fired a shot that killed him.
Kirk was speaking on a college campus in Utah. Several thousand people were on hand when the bullet struck his neck. The FBI is asking anyone with photos or videos of the event at Utah Valley University to share it on their online tip forum. Kirk was an ally of President Trump and co-founder of Turning Point USA, a political youth organization. Utah's Governor Spencer Cox called his killing a political assassination.
To whoever did this, we will find you. We will try you, and we will hold you accountable to the furthest extent of the law. And I just want to remind people that we still have the death penalty here in the state of Utah.
NPR's Kirk Siegler is covering the story in Orem, Utah. Kirk, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
I just want to note there have been a lot of conclusions jumped to and accusations on social media, but after every breaking story, we emphasize that a lot of what seems clear at the beginning turns out not to be true, and a lot is unknown. So bring us some facts. What is known about who did this?
Well, to your point, very little right now. You know, I'm across the street from the campus of Utah Valley University. It's a fortress, as you can imagine, Steve. Police cars are barricading most all the entrances. It's hard to get in anywhere. And yesterday, police here took two different people into custody but released them both pretty quickly. And it seems like there's been confusion among law enforcement agencies. You know, last night, FBI Director Kash Patel tweeted that a suspect was in custody. And then a short while later, he tweeted again that that person of interest was released. This is a large campus I'm across from. There are lots of cameras and lots of eyewitness video to go through. Police say the gunman fired from the roof of a building down onto the event. We do know that. And we also know, Steve, that you know these graphic videos from social media show it a very chaotic scene. And now we have a manhunt in Utah or possibly beyond.
What's it like to be in the middle of that?
Well, it's safe to say the entire Salt Lake City region here is waking up, I think, on edge with a suspect on the loose. You know, remember, this is Utah. Someone on the run could pretty quickly get out of this city and into very remote desert country. Yeah. So the manhunt has everyone on edge. You know, people are mourning, people are rattled. Isaac Davis is a student we talked to at Utah Valley University. He told us he skipped class yesterday and went to the Kirk event because he was curious. And he said, you know, there was a lot of energy on campus about it. And just a few minutes after he got there, he says it turned chaotic. Let's listen.
There was a huge shot. It sounded like it came from behind me somewhere. It took a second to kind of register, but once I saw people start to kind of go into kind of a hysteric state, and I saw Charlie go kind of limp, I knew that something was wrong.
And, you know, Steve, these eyewitness videos that are now viral just show chaos. You know, people running away, one man screaming, carrying his small son with him. And Davis told us that he ran into the nearest building and hid in a classroom for a few minutes, and then he decided to make a run for his house, which is about a mile from campus. Davis thought it was a mass shooting, and I think a lot of people did initially, but it was just one shot.
You mentioned the FBI director already. It sounds like this is both a state and federal investigation.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on the FBI, it's safe to say. The president himself referred to the investigations in a video. The authorities do not know who fired the shot on Kirk or what the motive was, as we've been saying. But Trump, in this video, talked of finding, quote, organizations.
My administration will find each and every one of those who contributed to this atrocity and to other political violence, including the organizations that fund it and support it.
So a lot of eyes on this investigation and the manhunt now underway, Steve.
That's NPR's Kirk Siegler in Orem, Utah. Kirk, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
As we just heard, the Utah event at which Charlie Kirk was killed had been set to kick off a national college tour. Here he is speaking with the president's daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, on Fox News earlier this year about what the meetups are like.
We tried to bring the excitement and the patriotism of a Trump rally to college campuses of all places. So got a couple thousand students waiting for us, and we're going to have a fun time.
Kirk had the view that college campuses were not places where freedom of speech thrived, and this is something he was trying to change and shape.
Well, free speech is our birthright as Americans. When you have free speech, we're going to get closer to the truth, closer to the best way to govern, closer to the best polity for the country. And here in college campuses, they're not places of free speech. They are islands of totalitarianism.
Let's hear more about him now from someone who also works to get conservatives motivated and activated. Matt Schlapp chairs the American Conservative Union, which organizes the Conservative Political Action Conference, or CPAC. He's also a former White House political director in the administration of George W. Bush, and he's with us now. Mr. Schlapp, this has to be a difficult day, so thank you so much for joining us despite that.
Yeah, thanks for covering an important and very tragic moment.
So Charlie Kirk was obviously a gifted man. What would you say his gifts were?
Well, you know, it's interesting. He went to college campuses, but he didn't go to college.
Hmm.
He started an organization at a really young age. I remember the first time he came to CPAC. It was probably over 10 years ago. And he was so young and had about 25 kids with him.
Hmm.
40 kids in red t-shirts, and he in his mind, he was intent on forming a new group and forming a movement, and he did just that, and did it with a lot of grace and got the attention of so many people.
What was he good at?
It made a huge difference.
Yeah, what was he good at? You know, sometimes, you know, when people who are established in any field, they kind of looked at the newcomers and go like, what are you doing? So what do you think, how did he make his mark? What did you notice about him that gave you a clue that he would be somebody important?
Well, he was entrepreneurial, so he was going to do something his own way. He didn't just have to follow what someone else did. He was starting his own group, which I just love people like that. It's so interesting when someone says, look, I'm going to do this improbable thing. And then he did something that was very interesting. He inspired the young and the old. He inspired the young, you know, people, you know, my kids' age, who would follow him on social media, and, you know, they would follow these moments on campus. And then he really got the attention of kind of the older crew who supported his organization because they were really worried about what they saw as trends with young people away from the traditional ideas and values that they wanted them to have, that they thought they were passing on, and that were somehow, they felt like their grandkids were being overtaken by this woke ideology that seemed to grip America for a period of time, but thankfully is waning.
So as we just heard, he was speaking at an event on a university campus. You go to public events. You were a White House aide, right? And people who work in the White House, as I did in the first Bush administration as a reporter, are very mindful of security. But when you've left that, now you're a public figure, but you're not part of that kind of security apparatus. Do you ever feel unsafe in public events?
Well, I'll just say this. I was on the White House on this terrible day, which we're going to remember today,
9/11. Yeah, you sure were.
Mercy and I, my wife, ran out of the White House in fear. And then people don't know it, but we ran out of the White House the second day, too, on the 12th, because we thought there was another attack. So there was a little bit of a fright throughout the staff. But the other thing we realized that day is the security is not there for all of us who are at the White House. The security is there for one man and the succession of the presidency. So even when you're in the middle of what you think would be the safest place, there's a fragility to everything that's involved in the human condition. And I will say this, I don't talk much about what the threats you face when you're in these types of positions, because I think, there's no sense instilling panic in people, but we're in a very bad and dark place in our country when it comes to violence. And I think we're just seeing a rapidity of really shocking events. And what I would encourage everyone to do is fight like heck in politics. You know, push for what you want. But at the end of the day, there's got to remain some respect for those that you're fighting and an understanding that they're doing what they think is right too. And the other thing that needs to happen is, quite frankly, people in the media, we need to stop villainizing people. People have ideas and you might not like them. There's a lot of people whose ideas I think are abhorrent. But, would I help them change their tire if they were on the side of the road? Hope I would.
But, on Newsmax yesterday, you called on leaders of the left to stop normalizing hatred and violence. Are you also calling on leaders of the right to do the same?
Everyone should stop doing that. But the only difference is in the age of Trump is that, there has been a outrageous commentary that goes on. It isn't stopped.
2 months ago, two elected Democratic state officials and their spouses were shot in Minnesota by a man who had a hit list of 45 elected Democrats he intended to kill. Former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband attacked in his home. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro's official residence set on fire. This would seem to be an equal opportunity problem, right?
I'm not sure it's equal, but I think there were examples on both sides that are repugnant. But I just want to look. I want to chastise you a little bit here. Someone who's very close to my family and to the conservative movement was assassinated yesterday. We haven't seen really anything like this. Somebody who's not even in elected office. I don't think this is the right moment for you to say to me that I am not sufficiently concerned about violence that happens from anyone. I think this is a moment to reflect on the life of a young man who made a big difference. And a lot of people are mourning it.
Yes.
And it is the wrong time for you to start assigning blame and to say I should have better commentary.
Oh, forgive me, but didn't you surface that issue? And am I not listening to you?
I can understand why you're getting defunded. This is outrageous.
I'm sorry.
This young man deserves some thoughtful appreciation this morning. He's the father of two children.
And we certainly are giving him that.
And you're turning this into...
No, I think we're certainly giving him the attention he deserves. And this is NPR News.
It's Morning Edition. It's here on KAXE. We are people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. We're getting national coverage. Coming up next, it's local coverage. I'm Heidi Holton. This time we're going to be learning about what's going on area lakes and the area rivers as the fall is approaching us and people are getting out and excited about fall fishing this time of year. Thanks so much for tuning in today. We'd like to thank you for listening and for your support. We'd also like to thank organizations like Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital, home to an experienced OBGYN team that provides comprehensive women's health services, including maternity and advanced gynecology care, all in Grand Rapids. Learn more at granditasca.org. Let's take a look at the weather. Areas of dense fog early today, then burning off to partly sunny skies. High 72 to 75, southeast winds 5 to 15, mostly cloudy for tonight with lows 50 to 60 around our region. Slight chance of showers in the morning tomorrow, partly sunny with temperatures in the mid to upper 70s. Looking about the same on Saturday, upper 70s to even low 80s around our region. We want to thank you for helping us out during the rescission that happened in, I think it was end of July, where federal funding was cut to public media across our nation. You helped us raise over $162,000 getting us through that time, this clawback of funding. You made that happen. Every action helps. You can donate, you can share our work, you can contact us, you can tell us about the news in your community. Visit KAXE.org and text the word donate now to 218-326-1234. This Saturday, Stay Human is going to the dogs and cats. It's an hour of story and song, celebrating the friend you can always count on. Saturday morning at 9, Sunday at 5 p.m. Virginia Public Library has a genealogy assistance program the second Thursday of the month at 4 p.m. Whether you are just starting out or fine-tuning your research, all are welcome. Later this morning, we check in with Jack Nackbar because the classic movie series at the Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork kicks off their season tonight at 6:30. This month's film is Jaws.
Gone fishing. Babble, 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 babble. There's a sign up on your door.
Pops, don't blab it around, will you?
Gone fishing.
Keep it shady. I got me a big one staked out.
You ain't working anymore.
I don't have to work. I got me a piece of Gary.
Cows need milking in the barn.
I have the twins on that detail. They each take a side.
But you just don't give a darn.
Give them 4 bits of cow and hand lotion.
You just never seem to learn.
Man, you taught me.
You ain't got no ambition.
You're convincing.
Gone fishing. Got your hound dog by your side.
That's old Cindy Lou going with me.
Gone fishing. Biting at his hide.
Get away from me, boys. You bother me. Folks won't find us now because Mr. Satch and Mr. Cross, we gone fishing instead of just a wishing.
Bumpo, baby, bumpo, bumpo, bumpo.
Oh, yeah.
It is time to go fishing on the Thursday morning show, where we check in every Thursday with our early bird fishing guide, Jeff Sundin, who joins us now. Morning, Jeff. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. You're welcome.
All right. So we're starting to see some signs of fall, even though we're getting into mid to upper 70s and even low 80s on Saturday. But let's talk about some of the big fish out there and if they're moving around or not. Fish like crappies and sunfish.
Everything is moving around. It was incredible. The water temperature on some of the lakes dropped in 3 days, dropped as much as 12 or 13 degrees. We had that cold front that moved through. Everybody was kind of hunkered down. The full moon came on the 7th, and I was sort of anticipating that there should be an uptick in the fishing action. And there sort of was, excepting for you had to be able to get to where the fish were biting. It was windy and cold and nasty all at the same time as that full moon was occurring. And it seemed like it shook everything up. There was things going on in new places. The panfish started to look like they were moving into fall locations. Now, here's the thing. My thoughts about what to do about all of this are meandering almost as much as the fish are, because if you go to one lake, you're going to find a scenario that's like the classic fall fishing pattern, almost exactly the way we talk about every year in the fall. And then if you go to another lake, you're going to find a lake where the fish are still hunkered down in the weeds and they act like it's the middle of late summer. The walleyes are doing some summer things and they're doing some fall things. I guess the simplest way to say it is you got to be kind of nimble right now and be prepared to, if whatever I say this morning, if it doesn't sound like it's working on your lake, just default back to whatever your favorite thing is and start moving around and checking all of the possible scenarios. I guess the simple way to start that would be to talk about the crappies for a second, because we've had some lakes now, one in particular in the Bemidji area, I had found crappies that had, because of that cold weather, they had moved away from the weeds and they pushed out towards the mid-lake structure, kind of the classic suspended over deeper water and in pretty tightly formed schools where once you found them, you could stay right kind of close by and then fish vertically with a jig and minnow or even troll back and forth through them with spinners, slip bobbers, so on and so forth, and be able to focus on those fish. Now, I got into a little jam yesterday because we had sunshine, totally flat, calm weather. The walleyes and the perch were sort of hunkered down, and I needed something to do. So we drove back over to that lake where the crappies were. This time, I was able to locate the crappies, but they were spread out horizontally across. Just imagine, like, over the top of a 30-foot hole that covers maybe a quarter mile or a half a mile, and then the fish are spread out. They're 10 feet below the surface of the water, and they're spread out horizontally over the top of that entire hole. So literally, as you go along and watch the graph, you see one fish here, one fish there, one fish here, one fish there. All of them are crappies, but the only way to really encounter them is to keep moving. You can't find a school of fish and then stop and just sit there and catch them. You have to keep moving. So that scenario all changed hands in about 4 or 5 days. They started to stack up, then they stopped. Now, I think what's going to happen, if the weather was to stay the same, we keep getting some more warm weather, more sunshine, surface water temperatures keep coming up a little bit, I think those horizontal fish are going to move back towards the weeds. We'll be able to go back to late summer patterns and find some of those fish in the cabbage. And this goes on kind of through the entire month of September. On the other hand, a friend of mine is fishing over on the Iron Range. Some of the lakes that he's on, the fish are doing exactly what you think they're supposed to do. They're steep drop off. Try to imagine a weed flat, maybe 8 to 10 feet of water, covers a little bit of territory. And then along the edge of that weed flat, you've got a drop off. That drop off turns in and gets really close to the shoreline someplace. Wherever that inside corner is, where the deep water meets the edge of that weed flat and also drops down into the lake's mid-lake, the deeper basin areas, those are the first places where the crappies start to stack up. So start looking for the weed flat. If you don't find the fish there, look on that edge, on the steeper edge, and for the inside corners that come up close to shore, that's the next spot where you should be able to find them. So that'll get you in the ballpark on crappie fishing right now. Sunfish, they seem to be a little more stable. I've noticed wherever I've located sunfish in the last couple weeks, they're sort of staying put. Now, I don't know if that's because they find the kind of food that they want, and so they just stay around that area because of, let's say that there's an insect hatch or some kind of, invertebrate that's coming out of the marl. They like a sandy, soft kind of marl clay mix bottom, and when they find these areas and they get happy in them, they tend to stay around. Now, that area could change next year. The same spot that's good today might not be good next year. But they seem to be stable throughout the fall. So once you've located 3 or 4 good sunfish spots, it seems that you can go back and repeat that. And that was the case for me yesterday. Sunfish were still in the same areas where I found them last week. It was just the crappies that had moved. And probably that's going to be a scenario that'll play out on most of the lake. One thing that I would say, if you're cruising around and you're looking at suspended fish on your graph, you see one school of fish that's holding suspended pretty high, 10, 12, 15 feet below the surface, maybe over 25 feet of water, let's say. But then you look below them and see another school of fish that's holding in, let's say, 20 feet of water. There's a pretty good chance that the high ones will be the crappies and the lower ones will be sunfish. On some lakes, there will be mixed other fish mixed in there. You could find a walleye mixed into that. You could find some perch down there. That depends on the makeup, the structure, and the fish species that are available in the lake that you're fishing. So it's all things to keep in your back pocket, though, when you're out looking around. Just some tips. Another little thing, as we get closer to the fall patterns, the crappies will tend to move and gather up deeper and more tightly into the real mid-lake. It'll get deeper and deeper as we go, where the sunfish, they'll stay towards those outer edges and on the flats that top off a little shallower. So you may see the crappies move out to 35 feet of water eventually, but you'll see the sunfish stay in 25 feet of water. So your movement can be horizontal in the later part of the fall. But I'm sure we're going to have more time. We'll talk about that next week or in the coming weeks for sure.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of panfish still by our boat. We were out on the pontoon last night, and we're seeing a lot of them at the boat lift there right by our dock. But I'd love to go fishing this weekend, so this is just totally selfish here. But what kind of bait should I use for crappies and sunfish this weekend?
Right now, I think the best way to do it, especially if you don't already know where they are for sure, The best way to do it is to troll using a spinner tipped with a small fathead or a large crappie minnow. That'll get you in the ballpark. Once you find a fish, though, then you have to take a look at your electronics, or if you're in shallow weeds or something like that, you might be able to even see the fish.
Mm-hmm.
You want to stop. We're using, most of the time, yesterday is a good example, an eighth-ounce jig with a crappie minnow on it. That will work vertically over the top of a school of crappies. They'll respond well to that. I used for a time the smallest size jigging Rapala is a really popular fall crappie bait. And it's heavy. You can drop it over the side. You have good control. You know just how deep you're fishing with it. You can count it down using rod lengths, or people come up with little tricks for figuring out how deep they're fishing. But if the fish are down 10 feet, a rod and a half length of line is about right to get you into that depth of the water. And then just a slight lift and drop with that jigging Rapala will get you quite a few strikes. For the sunfish, an 1/8-ounce jig or a 1/16th of an ounce jig with a cut piece of a night crawler on it, that'll get you in the ballpark. Wax worms. Later on, as it gets colder, we start using ice fishing lures, the small tungsten things, and that doesn't seem to come into play right away. The fish are still sort of active now. The water is fairly warm, but the sunfish don't always respond as well to the spinners. The searching for sunfish in the summertime when the water is warm with the spinners is really easy, and you can keep catching fish. I would say now, if you troll, tip your spinner with a half of a night crawler or maybe a third of it, catch one sunfish, stop right there. Throw out a marker buoy or figure out a way to stay in that area. Or in your case, if you're already seeing the fish, that's all you're really going to need to do. We like to tight line, just drop the thing over the side. But you can add a bobber to it if the fish are, if it's in fairly shallow water and it's manageable. Fishing with a float works pretty good. And once you've got the location pinned down, one little trick, sunfish are incredibly curious. So just a plain hook with either a cut piece of night crawler, a couple of wax worms, red worm, some sort of live bait on there. And then just above your hook, not a functioning, we don't want to use a spinner like we're going to troll with it, but maybe a half an inch up from the hook, a small gold spinner blade, just something that flashes. So they'll see the flash in the water. That'll attract their attention. And then they'll come over, and the live bait is what triggers them to strike. And you can fish that either tight lining with a split shot sinker, or you can use that below a float. The presentation, whether you're dropping the jig over the side or using a slip bobber or something like that, it totally depends on where the fish are. If they're in 18 or 20 feet of water, you need something that gets down a little bit deeper. If they're up shallow, you can use the shallow, like a clip-on float or something like that, just to put the bait where the fish are. That's the entire reason for switching presentations.
So always keep it aware. Don't just go try somewhere for a while and nothing's happening and then go home sad. Just keep moving around, right?
Well, that's right. And sometimes, like for me now, if you have a cabin on a lake and that's your lake and that's where you're going to fish, that changes the picture. You have to just cover as much territory as you can within that lake and work with what you've got to work with. Now, for me, yesterday, we started off with the sunshine and the calm water. We were trying to catch walleyes and perch. Our intention was not to go fishing for crappies and sunfish. That was the plan B, but you get a calm, sunny day. The walleyes were hunkered down. The perch were hunkered down. Even though I knew the areas where the fish were, that didn't mean anything because we couldn't get them to come out. They hunker into the weeds, and sometimes they're just in there so deep that there's nothing you can do to encourage them to come out and bite. So moving from spot to spot within a lake is one way to do it, but moving from lake to lake is also another way to do it. If you're mobile and you can pull the boat out easily, do a quick cleanup and so on and so forth, and switch to a different lake, sometimes that's all. You're in an ideal situation because you can stay in a boat and you can switch lakes both. If you want to, you can go into two or three other lakes from the one you're on. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, and all of the little bays. There's lots of water to explore there. I'm sort of envious that I don't live on a lake like that where I can move around and cover. That's another story for another day.
Well, let's move into another story completely, too, eating fish. You said there are some restaurants out there where you can catch your fish and then bring it in, and you can cook your own catch.
Yeah, and you know what? It's really popular with my customers love doing this. In the old days, you would pull up someplace and you would cook a shore lunch or maybe dinner at the end of the day, but because of switching lakes or all of the things that go along with that, you have to take your fish out of the live well, get rid of your minnows, go get more new ones, and so on and so forth. The whole idea of cooking our catch has just changed over time. And so throughout history, some of the different restaurants in the area will offer this, you know, catch of the day, bring in your own fish, and then they'll either sell you the service of just cooking your fish for you, or some places will sell you the side dishes and then cook your fish as a service along with it. The problem is that it changes from time to time. I've written about it, and then I feel bad because I'll offer a recommendation. A good example in Cohasset, Florio's used to do this, and they had a great fish fry, but they don't offer it anymore. And up Highway 38, Cedar Creek Grill used to do it, but they have changed ownership. They don't do it anymore. So some of the places that still do, the Stony Point Resort over on Cass Lake, if you let them know ahead of time, they'll do it. But they like to get a little advance warning, and they like you to get in early. Don't just show up at their doorstep with a bag of fish and say, here, cook these. But if you've got some advance notice, they'll do it for you. In Deer River, the outpost right adjacent to the White Oak Hotel, they'll do it for you. They're not open every day of the week, so you have to make sure that you do it on a day they're open. The same is true of the Big Fish Supper Club over in Bena. We did it there last night. They're open Wednesday through Saturday, so if it's the tail end of the week, you can drop in there and do it. They do a nice job. Probably the one place in our area close to home that is 7 days a week, you can walk in, drop your fish on the table, and they're going to do it no matter what, is the Gosh Dam place north of Deer River. There, that's probably the single most reliable place that I know about. Now, the problem is that folks that are listening, they probably know some other places that I don't know about, just because they tend not to be very well advertised. So I just want to throw it out there. If you've got a great idea, we're always looking. It's been particularly hard for me to find places close to Bemidji. Whenever I'm fishing in the Bemidji region, we've called around to several places that we haven't ever seemed to have been able to locate anybody that does it. So you might know somebody over there, and, you know, give me a heads up and I'll make sure to make a note of it. And like I say, it's really kind of nice at the end of the day. You bring in your fish, you sit down, somebody else cooks them for you. No sweat, no hassle. You just sit there, relax, you know, have a cocktail or a soft drink and let somebody else do all the work.
You can let us know if you know of a place like Jeff's talking about, but near Bemidji or in the Brainerd area. Text us at 218-326-1234. You can connect with Jeff through his website at jeffsundin.com. Any quick before we go, any things to keep in mind for the weekend ahead?
If we get wind, if you love catching walleyes and we get some windy conditions and a little bit of clouds, the big popular lakes are starting to produce some fish. Winnie is doing okay. It's better some days than others, but if you get the right kind of conditions and you want to fish walleyes, go for it. They're doing okay. If you get stuck with a sunny day and the weather is too calm, probably I think right now the sunfish and crappies are the more fun thing to do. That probably, like I said, the fall patterns are starting to kick in. And a little bit of prospecting around, you should be able to find. If you can't find crappies, you ought to be able to find sunfish. One of those two in most lakes are going pretty good right now.
All right. Thanks so much, Jeff. Have a great week.
You too. See ya.
See ya. JeffSundin.com for more information and fishing reports. We'd love to hear from you. If you've been out fishing lately, if you're going out fishing this weekend and you're catching some fish, snap a photo. Send it our way. You can text it to 218-326-1234. I'm Heidi Holton at 642. Up next, we've got National Native News. Dan Karpinchak is reporting on a big legal win and validation for a First Nation in Ontario, where the Supreme Court of Canada has dismissed a request to appeal lower court decisions granting a valuable section of a beach to the Saugeen First Nation. Stay tuned for that story. We've got more from National Public Radio and local news. Coming up in about an hour, we check in with our news director, Chelsea Perkins. Things going on around our region. The classic movie series at the Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork kicks off tonight at 6:30. This month's film is Jaws. Learn more about it coming up at 7:20 when we check in with Jack Nackbar. Also going on this weekend, the Masaba Concert Association. That's tonight at 7 p.m. at the Hibbing High School Auditorium. They have Young Original, a fusion of jazz, classical, folk, and pop. And this weekend is Walker Ethnic Fest in downtown Walker. Food and art from 10 to 5, parade at 11, live music from noon to 9, and there's a local food demonstration at the Grand Rapids Farmers Market on Saturday at 10 a.m. You can learn how to make apple cabbage salad. There'll be a limited number of free ingredient kits available.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A big win for a First Nation in Ontario. The Supreme Court of Canada has dismissed a request from the town of South Bruce Peninsula to appeal a lower court decision that granted a valuable section of beach to the Saugeen First Nation. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the chief of the band calls the ruling like a breath of fresh air.
In April of 2023, the Ontario Appeal Court granted the First Nation ownership of just over a mile of Sandy Beach in the town of Sauble Beach. It's been a long fight. The case was brought before the courts 35 years ago, but that came nearly 100 years since Indigenous leaders claimed that a treaty in 1854 gave them ownership of the disputed shoreline. Conrad Ritchie is the chief of the Saugeen First Nation.
That's how resilient and patient our people have been to feel finally heard and seen and validated. You're holding your breath for such a long time, and it's like once you get the news, it's just like a breath of fresh air.
With the ruling to appeal now denied by the Supreme Court, the town of South Bruce Peninsula and several landowners appear to have exhausted all legal avenues to retain ownership. On Canada Day, the name of the beach was officially changed from Sauble Beach to Saugeen Beach by the First Nation. Here again, Chief Ritchie.
It kind of grooms society. It kind of grooms community. It kind of grooms children when you have a colonial name that's supposed to be the Indigenous people of that land's land and beach.
Now that the legal wrangling over ownership of the land has been decided, the next step is to discuss compensation with the federal government for breaking that 1854 treaty. Meanwhile, Ritchie says Saugeen Beach will continue to be open to the public as a tourist destination. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
This past weekend, roughly 10,000 people converged on Bismarck, North Dakota to drum, dance, and celebrate one of the region's oldest powwows. Senior reporter Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire has the story.
It's going to be a good day here at the United Tribes Technical College International Powwow.
The 55th United Tribes Technical College International Powwow started modestly in 1970. A small group of students held it on a tennis court. But in the years since, it's exploded in scale and magnitude, drawing participants and visitors from all over, including Europe. UTTC President Leander McDonald says it's not only a cultural event, but a huge economic boost to the Bismarck area when combined with several other events like their sports tournaments.
And a previous study indicated $4.2 million for that week. Did another analysis, but we felt it was kind of off a little bit because they told us a million. And so now we're working with the Bismarck Mainland Chamber here, and they have some folks that do analysis on just events on their own.
Historically, the UTTC International Powwow was also once the last call before winter, before indoor powwows and those in warmer climes took off. This year's event was covered live by Buffalo's Fire and Prairie Public, a statewide public media broadcast organization. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull in Bismarck.
A bill to require the California Department of Transportation and Department of Public Health to work together to address countermeasures to deter suicide attempts on bridges and overpasses was sent to the governor's desk on Tuesday. Native American Assemblymember James Ramos introduced the bill as part of broader work to address mental health care in the state. Ramos says California must do more to confront the great tragedy of suicide, adding the new measure is intended to help prevent future sorrow. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding in part by the Annenberg Foundation and the Ford Foundation. It is 6:48. Thanks for tuning in. Looking at the temperatures and conditions around our region, still widespread fog. Be careful out there. Take your time as there is a dense fog advisory. We've got 51 degrees right now in Hibbing and Grand Rapids, 52 in Bemidji with mist, Aiken fog 52, Brainerd's reporting 53 degrees. Looks like McGregor at 52, Monoman at 56 right now. And Floodwood reporting 52 degrees with cloudy skies. For the rest of our day, we are expecting partly sunny skies, lovely day, high 72 to 75, southeast winds 5 to 15, mostly cloudy overnight tonight, 50 to 60 all across northern Minnesota, and a slight chance of showers in the morning tomorrow, but then partly sunny with temperatures in the mid to upper 70s. Coming up next from Morning Edition, the new federal restrictions on who can get the new COVID-19 vaccines are causing anxiety, frustration, and anger around the country as people scramble to navigate the confusing patchwork of rules. Stay tuned for that coming up right after the set list with Malachi Coons. We receive support from Dale's Auto Body, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984. Performing auto body and collision repair as well as auto glass replacement, dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information, dalesautobodyinc.com. We'd also like to thank Coldwell Banker, Northwoods Realty. They help guide your real estate journey in northern Minnesota and have since 1947. Buying or selling land or lakeshore, more at coldwellbankernorthwoods.com.
This is the set list on KAXC, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malachi Coons. We are looking at shows Thursday through Saturday, September 11th through the 13th, in Grand Rapids, Aiken, Coleraine, and Big Fork. First up, folk singer-songwriter Rachel Kilgore is coming to the Co House in Grand Rapids Thursday at 7:30 p.m. The Duluth singer won the 2017 Careville New Folk Contest and most recently released the album My Father Loved Me in 2023, which explored her relationship with her late father. She is a 2025 McKnight Music Fellow. It is Rachel Kilgore this Thursday at the Co House in Grand Rapids. On Friday, Jay Bell and the Lazy Susan Band are playing The Terrace in downtown Aiken at 7 p.m. An Americana and rock and roll band that features a horn section, B3 Hammond, and twangy guitars, they've released 6 albums since forming in 2001. Jay Bell and the Lazy Susan Band in Aiken Friday night. On Saturday, the Bugle Boys are playing at Smoke on the Water in Coleraine at 6 p.m. A stripped-down duo of vocalist and guitarist Clay Fulton and the drummer from his band The Lost 40, the Bugle Boys play a stomping and rowdy brand of folk blues music. Saturday in Coleraine at Smoke on the Water. Finally, Sam Miltich and friends are playing at the Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork Saturday at 7 p.m. The Militici new music from the Old Country Show will feature the jazz group's take on Balkan and other Eastern European folk music, a style Miltich explored on his 2019 album, Peasants with Torches. Sam Miltich and friends in Big Fork this Saturday. The set list is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and we'll post the latest edition every Wednesday at KAXC.org.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. We're finding out how the new federal restrictions on the COVID vaccine are playing out in the real world. President Trump's Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. narrowed who is eligible, and that is causing confusion, to say the least. NPR health correspondent Rob Stein spoke with people who've been getting turned away at the pharmacy. Hey there, Rob.
Good morning, Steve.
Okay, so the basic idea is that anybody who wants a COVID vaccine cannot necessarily just walk into a pharmacy and get one, which was true in the past. How's this playing out?
You know, Steve, it's a mixed bag. The vaccines are only approved for people most likely to get really sick from COVID because they're at least 65 years old or have some other health issue that makes COVID particularly dangerous. Some people are still able to get vaccinated, no problem, because they're still eligible, or do what's called self-attestation. Just tell a pharmacist, yeah, I'm eligible. Mm. But the rules for how this works vary from state to state, so a lot of people are having a hard time getting vaccinated.
And there are a lot of people who are trying because they've heard about the changing rules and they want to get in under the wire, get the shot done. What are you hearing from people trying to get a shot?
Yeah. For example, I talked about this yesterday with Jason Mitten. He's 55, lives in Austin, doesn't want the misery of getting COVID again, missing work. So he tried to get vaccinated last Friday before heading off on a business trip. But the pharmacist refused, even though Mitten is getting treated for high blood pressure.
And he's like, well, do you have a doctor's note? I said, no, I don't. He said, well, the FDA standards say that you don't qualify. And our policy is that we won't administer it unless you qualify. I think it's ridiculous, honestly. I think it should be a person's right to choose to get the vaccine or not. Right now, it feels like the right to get the vaccine is being prevented. So I'm very angry about that. To me, it's ridiculous. I'm angry about it.
You know, Steve, I'm hearing lots of stories like this. Some people get turned away because they don't meet the new criteria. Some get told they can only get a shot if they come back with a prescription. Some still get rejected even when they go back with a doctor's order.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, I've heard about people going from pharmacy to pharmacy, doctor to doctor, even sometimes state to state, hunting for a shot. And many times, they just don't want the vaccine to protect themselves.
Meaning that they want it to protect other people as well. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah. Many people want their whole family to get protected, even if they're healthy. They don't want to catch the virus and then spread it to, say, you know, grandma or grandpa, or some very young kids in a family, someone whose immune system is weak because maybe they have cancer. Allison Coates, 32, healthy, lives in Bristol, Connecticut. She's worried about her dad, who's in heart failure, other family who have diabetes, one who recently got a kidney transplant, not to mention her 16-month-old son.
Wow.
COVID can be quite dangerous for babies.
I'm very angry, frustrated, I'm sad. It's just really upsetting. Why do I have to jump through hoops to do this? Yeah, it's kind of scary, you know?
So she's thinking about doing what some other people are doing, just saying she's eligible. But she has no idea how she'll get a shot for her baby, who isn't on the list under the new rules either.
Can anything improve the situation here?
Well, everyone's on the edge of their seat waiting for a big CDC meeting next week. CDC advisors go beyond the FDA and issue recommendations, specific recommendations for who should get a shot. That could clear out some of the roadblocks, let pharmacists in more states give the shots, make the shots available for free to eligible kids through a big federal program. But Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. fired the original members of this committee and replaced them with his own, many of whom share his anti-vaccine views, so no one's sure exactly what they're going to do.
NPR health correspondent Rob Stein, thanks for the information, Rob.
You bet, Steve.
And you hear Rob right here on NPR News.
Listening to music from our album of the week. It's by Curtis Harding. It's called The Arrivals and Departures, Adventures of Captain Kurt, the song here called Bon Me. I'm Heidi Holton with Jennifer Barr. We want to know what you think of the album of the week. You can text 218-326-1234. It's described as a sci-fi concept album bringing classic soul to a space opera.
I like that concept.
Yeah. I don't know if I hear space opera in this. Maybe.
Yeah. You know, I think it's one of those, if you listened all the way front to the end,
yeah,
you would maybe hear kind of the narrative in there.
Okay.
Which I have not done yet. I rarely, with our albums, you know, sit down and listen to a whole album. So
sounds kind of fun to do, actually.
Yeah.
I should do that more often. Sounds relaxing and not like you're interrupting yourself every few moments and mm-hmm. all of that that I seem to do all the time. Mm-hmm. Coming up, we're going to have local news with the Up North Report. Then we get to talk Jaws at 7:20 with Jack Nackbar. Have you seen Jaws,
Jennifer? I have probably just seen like just parts. Clips. Yeah,
okay.
Not even like enough to really know the story. Obviously, it's about a shark.
Yeah, and it was one of the best selling still.